What does new evangelization actually mean? How does the church, universally and locally, envision its concrete application? Is there any master plan? And what do they really talk about at the Ratzinger summer schools? These are just some of the questions that I put to Father Vincent Toomey, Divine Word missionary, Professor Emeritus of Moral Theology at Maynooth Seminary in Ireland, and one of the founding members of the Ratzinger Schülerkreis. Recently convened for their annual meeting in Castel Gandolfo from August 25th to 28th, the group of 40 former theology and philosophy students of then Professor Joseph Ratzinger were given the task of discussing this sometimes nebulous term. Added to their ranks were academics who have chosen to study the thought and writings of Joseph Ratzinger, a suggestion first put forward by the Irish priest himself, creating a veritable think tank with some surprising results. In the first part of this two-part interview, Father Toomey speaks of how the concept of new evangelization is a thread that runs throughout the teaching and writings of Pope Benedict XVI, then Professor Ratzinger, stretching right back to their first meeting over 40 years ago, when a young Irish missionary priest sought out the promising and brilliant theologian in his simple Bavarian home to ask to study under him. Father Toomey takes us on a journey from the Munster and Tübingen years through the establishment of the Ratzinger Doctoral Colloquium to the Regensburg years and finally Rome. Father Toomey speaks about why the new evangelization calls for God's humility and why, contrary to popular belief, secularization is not wholly negative. The reason we're speaking to you today is because you've just spent the last couple of days in Castel Gandolfo as part of the Schülerkreis, or what is known in English as the Papal Summer School. You've been a member of this school for quite a long time. Can you just take us back all those years?
40 years exactly this year.
All those years. The first time you met, came face to face with then Joseph Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI.
Well, I have to go back a year before that because my superiors gave me permission to go to study for a doctorate in Germany. At the time, we had a student hostel in the university city of Münster. My original intention was to actually study under the then unknown Walter Kasper. But a day or two before I left for Germany, I ran into my old professor of fundamental theology, Kevin McNamara, who asked me what I was going to do. And I told him going to Munster, but then I would move to Tübingen because Kasper had already moved to Tübingen that year. He said, no, I said, don't go to Tübingen because we had a very promising young theologian, German theologian, here at the Maynooth Summer School last year, that would have been 69, who said he had to leave Tübingen because he couldn't do any real study or work because of the student unrest and because of tensions on the faculty. And he moved to his own home of Bavaria. His name is Joseph Ratzinger. But he said, anyhow, don't go to Tübingen. Yeah, so I said, okay, I won't go to Tübingen. Went to Munster. Then I sat in on the lectures of Karl Rahner, who at the time was the big figure in theology, and attended his seminar. And within a very short time, I knew I couldn't study under Karl Rahner. So I remember this conversation with Kevin McNamara. And I said, I wonder now, would Joseph Ratzinger, he's not very well known either, thank God. And I had read one of his books, Introduction to Christianity, his classic book, really, in a sense. I wonder, would he accept me? So I wrote to him, and he said, come, we'll have an interview. So I went down in January of 1971. I got a taxi, went off to his private house in the suburbs of Regensburg, Pentling. And he received me. And what struck me immediately was how simple the house was. A new house, but very basic furniture, very simple, and mostly books, of course, around the place, but very neat. And he himself, a very simple man, with wonderfully sparkling eyes and extraordinary ears. Yeah. So he listened very carefully. I spoke as I normally do, non-stop. He quietly listened, nodded, and was wondering then, would he accept me? And he said, well, what would you like to study? So I had a whole list of things I would like to study. He smiled and said, okay, we'll discuss that later. So that was my first meeting with him, and the rest is history.
So you studied under the then Professor Joseph Ratzinger, but it was a little while later that the actual Schülerkreis came into existence. How was that born?
And well, it was born really in, I think, Munster, even in Tübingen, when he began to receive, to take on a lot of doctoral and postdoctoral students. He also was engaged with the council. He was Paretus, so he was up and down to Rome. He was involved in various commissions. He really had no time to spend much time with his students, so he formed a doctoral colloquium. Now, that's not an unusual thing, but his was unusual because it met regularly. And there the students would discuss their research with him and with others. Yeah. And by the time I came to Regensburg in 71, we had about 30 members of the colloquium.
And where were they drawn from?
Half were German and half from all over the world. Yeah. From America, South America, Spain, Italy, Korea, India. So they were from all over. It was 50-50 German, 50-50 international. Yeah.
So he really drew people to him.
He did. He was known at the time for being rather critical of developments after the council. And there were a number of people who were also young people who were also not really impressed with the way things were, the council was being interpreted. And of course his writings were, in Germany his writings were quite well known, really made an impression, especially his book Introduction to Christianity, and abroad as well. It was translated eventually into 20, 30 languages. So he was a man who was marked by a marvellous openness of mind.
A lot of people wouldn't associate that with Pope Benedict now.
Well, I wrote a little book, if I might advertise for it, called Pope Benedict XVI, The Conscience of Our Age. And in it, I compare my time in Munster with Rahner, the theologian at the time, and my experiences in Regensburg with Ratzinger. Rahner was known for his dialogue and talk about openness to the world, etc., etc. But he had become an oracle. He just spoke and spoke and spoke. And we students were totally frustrated. We just couldn't discuss anything with him. He wasn't interested. In Ratzinger, he had this big seminar, but also this colloquium, but also in his seminars for ordinary students, he had the capacity to create an atmosphere of discussion where everybody felt he could say what he wanted to say, provided he was being honest and could try and substantiate what he said by recourse to scripture, tradition, or whatever it is, you know, philosophy. And Ratzinger has the wonderful capacity to listen to what everybody says. Apart from extraordinary intellect, he also has an extraordinary memory, quite extraordinary. He knew all our names within about a week or two. Normally, a colloquium or a seminar, they had the same structure. Somebody would read a paper, a student, and then the paper would be open for discussion. Half an hour paper, 1 hour discussion. And Ratzinger would allow the discussion simply happen. And then after 20 minutes or so, he would begin to draw the threads together. Then he would say suddenly, Mr. Müller there, he made a point that nobody took up afterwards. And Mr. Müller looks up, what did I say? Some young student, you see. And he was saying this, and then he explained what he was trying to say. And Müller would say, well, that's what I was trying to say. But he had grasped the point, and then he said, well, this is a point, this is an objection that really has to be faced. And then we take the objection a little bit further. Then he would give it more deeper foundation, and then he said, now we have to address that question, yeah? And it's open to you. So in that sense, you really felt you were being listened to and taken seriously. And then when the hour and a half was up, in the middle of the discussion, that was the end of it. We just went off. There was no attempt to put things together, to teach us anything. Later, writing about teaching and about education, he said it's the task of the teacher to be a type of midwife, in a sense, to allow the student to discover for himself what is the truth and not to anticipate it by, you know, giving him the answer too early, you know.
So what kind of issues, what kind of areas of theology in those early years were predominant?
We had, this was the extraordinary thing, we had about an average of 30 people. That would include also guests, people who spent a year with us, like Cardinal Schönborn. At the time, Father Schönborn was writing his postdoctoral thesis on the icons, on the theology of the icon of Christ. You had the whole spectrum of opinion from so-called left to right. That's the first thing. You had the whole spectrum of topics. You had some writing on the early fathers, Irenaeus. I wrote on Athanasius, Leo the Great, Others were writing on the medieval theologians, Bonaventure, and some then the Baroque theologians, right up to the modern, right up to Kafka, and even Voodooism.
Voodooism.
Yes, indeed. One of the most brilliant students at the time was a priest from Benin. He's now secretary to the for the Council for Culture, and he did his theology. He comes from the royal family of Benin, and he actually was very familiar with the very, very profound religion of Voodooism. Now, Voodooism has a bad name because when the slaves went over to the Caribbean and to South America, it was a degenerate form of superstition that actually was left over and was also combined with forms of Christianity. But Voodoo, the religious tradition of the Benin people, which is found in myth and ritual, is very, very profound. And he was looking for his primary concern is inculturation, of interculturation, of finding actually in the tradition of his own people those vestiges of the truth, which the early philosophers also found in the, you know, in the pagan traditions that they came out of. So we had Voodooism was one of the topics, you know. Another topic that was, of course, was most interesting was Kafka. You know? Then you had Hans van Baader. He was associated with the kind of a philosopher of the 19th century, I think. But there was this marvelous spectrum of topics, and you learned so much. Just simply, you know, hearing these neophytes struggling with their own ideas, trying to come to grips with some of the great thinkers of the whole Western tradition, Christian tradition, Catholic tradition, and being free to express your own, you know, opinion, you know. So everything was discussed, yeah. So this was then the doctoral colloquium. Now, in 1977, Professor Ratzinger, to my great disappointment, was elected Archbishop of Munich and Freising. Now, he had a number of us, like myself, who were eternal students and who hadn't finished our thesis. So he retained his position as official position as professor. I think he still actually has that title, in order to see through his 10, 12 students who were still to be, you know, still working on their thesis or more. So he had to meet with us regularly. So he had to continue the colloquium, in other words, which he did. And then sometime in 1980 or something, when our numbers were beginning to thin out, somebody had the great idea, I forget who it was, that we would actually invite back former doctoral and postdoctoral students, who then would meet with us during the summer period, towards the end of the summer. And at that time, Ratzinger was moving to Rome, you know. So it was at the end of his summer holidays, we would meet for a few days, sometimes a week, to continue our encounters. But also, we had also the tradition, even in Regensburg, at the end of every academic year, that we would go to some place in the Bavarian woods or something, to a monastery or such, and invite a well-known thinker or theologian, Pannenberg, for example, Rahner, Balthasar, and invite them to discuss with us their latest research projects, their book that they were writing or something like that. And that was a weekend. That really was the model then for the Schülerkreis. You see, we would go away somewhere. Mostly it was near Regensburg, a place called Spindelhof, a retreat house where we would spend a few days, and Ratzinger would come to us. He lived nearby, and we would invite people to, you know, give talks, to do the very same thing as we used to before, but also we'd have time to speak with them ourselves, discuss our own projects, our own research projects, etc., etc. And that continued then from 81 down to this year, so 30 years. Yeah? So we've met every year.
Fast forward to modern times, they say there's no doubt, there can be absolutely no doubt that the Ratzinger Schülerkreis has influenced theology, particularly in recent years within the Catholic Church. He is the foremost thinker, not only within the Catholic Church, but many recognise him also as one of the foremost thinkers at a global level. This year, the subject was that was chosen was the new evangelization. Now, as a non-theologian, as an ordinary Joe Soap, I find
no
it to be...
Thing, by the way.
I find it quite, you know, the term new evangelization has been bandied around both within church and media circles for the last year. The new council was formed. But there doesn't seem to be any concrete concept of what that actually means. Now, I don't expect theologians to come up with concrete concepts, but just talk to us a little bit about what was discussed at this 2011 edition of the Schule Kreis.
Well, first thing, we had two speakers. One of them actually refused to define it. He said it's a movement more than a definition. You see, we're talking about concrete reality of the encounter between the believer and the post-Christian world of Europe. That really is the... And how to reach out. How to bring the joy and the hope, which is our good news, to those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death, to quote a traditional rendering of our own SVD missionary tradition. By the way, when the Pope was elected in 2005, and he met us a few days afterwards, the first thing he said to us was, we're going to continue our meetings. And the first was on Islam, as it so happened. Then he went down to Regensburg, and we heard what happened after that. Mm-hmm. So we had two speakers, both lay people. One, wonderful retired now professor emeritus of philosophy from Dresden, Hanna-Barbara Gerl-Falkowitz, a wonderful... she gave a brilliant talk. Dresden, as you know, is perhaps in the most secularized part of Europe. This is what was the East Europe communist regime, 40 years of Marxism, before that 10 years or more of Nazism, and before that the whole liberal Prussian state, which kind of effectively tried to eliminate Catholicism, certainly, you know. So it's a very, very... it's a place which is really secular in the most regular, radical sense. Now, she's a professor of philosophy, and she gave us a brilliant talk. Really, was kind of fireworks most of the time, on the developments within contemporary philosophy, showing how contemporary philosophy, as it were, which is marked by the Enlightenment and the post-Enlightenment developments and modernity, how it actually is beginning to go beyond its own initial premises, which could be called rationalistic and therefore limited the search for truth to rationalistic concepts and ultimately in moral terms to utilitarianism, and how in recent times there has been an opening within certain contemporary philosophers, and she mentions the French Jean-Luc Marion in particular, and an Italian, I think is Ambien, I think was the name, I just really doesn't come, I've forgotten the actual name. Anyhow, he showed that already within contemporary moral, contemporary philosophy, there is, as it were, an opening of the mind to that which is beyond immediate comprehension, you know, a discovery, you know, of God, if you wish, and reaching out. Her talk was called Athens and Jerusalem. Athens standing as a symbol for critical reasoning, you know, and how reason itself is kind of working towards an openness which marked the also the early philosophers, and which gave Christianity originally the bridge to cross over and speak to the non-Jewish world, you know, out of which Christianity emerged, the non-Hebrew world, the world of the prophets. So Athens and Jerusalem. Jerusalem stands then for the place of God's self-revelation, ultimately in Christ, but going back to Abraham, and how she sees already a bridge emerging between reason and revelation, you know, which has been a subject, as you know, of of the late Pope, Blessed John Paul II, and the present Pope. It really runs right through his whole thinking, from his inaugural lecture in Bonn when he first became a professor, when he talked about the Christianity speaking to critical reason, and that being, as it were, the bridge that was used for God to enter into the heart of European civilization, in the heart of what became European civilization. Now, the other talk then was quite different in the afternoon. That was by Otto Neubauer. He's a married man with 6 children, very dynamic. He has been working with the Emmanuel community for 20 years. He's a full-time evangelizer. Yeah? And he gave quite a different talk. In a way, Frau Gerl Falkowitz, she more or less showed how through reason she could touch the mind of young people who had knew nothing about the faith, you know, and open up to them perspectives that really enrich their lives and that would enable them eventually, and some of them do, then accept the faith, you know, but as a liberation from secular thinking, which is very limited. Neubauer, he really spoke to the heart, man of the heart. And he, from his experience of 20 years of reaching out to man, woman and child at every level of the social spectrum, came to the conclusion that new evangelization really is predicated on humility, the humility of God, who emptied himself and who became man so that we could become God. That's the way the early fathers put it. He didn't use that language, by the way, but he was saying the same. His language was he became God so that he could make us friends. Yeah. So he goes as the friend of Jesus Christ to invite others. And then that's the humility of God. Of course, that's the root of everything. His talk was entitled "Vom Hohen Ross Absteigen," you know, get down from your high horse, sort of thing, you know. And he, in other words, God did that. He emptied himself and became man, a child, and walked and approached us in order to win our friendship, our love. You see, so that is that was his approach, and it was very, very beautiful. But then he says, "There's another humility that you discover when you try to, you know, bring people to the friendship of Christ." He's already there. And in what appears to be a godless society, God is at work, you know. Now, I'm using my words. He said it much more eloquently in a different way. And he said, you then learn, here I'm quoting him, you learn to adore Christ in the other. And that then you realize that when you go to evangelize, that you are being evangelized yourself. That God is working through others in order to get at you. You see, it's very, very beautiful, yeah. So for him, new evangelization is a way of, you know, rediscovering the original mission of the church, which is not territorially limited, as was thought when our society was founded, go out and to the whole world. In other words, leave Catholic Europe or Catholic Ireland and go and convert the pagans. Yeah. No, said the pagans are. Frau Gerl Falkowitz had once said, we were talking about the courtyard of the Gentiles, something the present Holy Father has suggested, based on the Jerusalem temple, which always had a courtyard for those Gentiles, those non-Jews who were searching for God and who couldn't, of course, enter the temple because they weren't Jews, but who actually were given a place already. They were the God-fearers, you know, out of which the many of the early Christians emerged, you see. And the Pope has suggested that we, and the new the Council for Culture is doing this, creating now courtyards for the Gentiles. In other words, to try and break down the false wall separating so-called Christians from non-Christians, to realize that we're all searching together, and to offer people who don't want to become Christians and who have perhaps bad experience of being Catholics, whatever it is, just enter into dialogue. Let's speak. We all search together. Now, the German word for Gentiles is Heiden, which is pagan, and someone objected, I don't like the word Heiden, pagans, the courtship of the pagans, and Frau Gerl Falkowitz said, but we're all half pagan, Very interesting. Something we forget. We're only half converted pagans anyhow. And this is why evangelization is a two-way process, We are recovering our own sense of what we should be as Christians. We think we're Christians, We're Catholics and all the rest of it. We've lost very often the spark. What struck me, of the many things that struck me very forcibly, one I'd like to mention, that was the way both speakers saw secularization as a negative term. You couldn't call it positive, but in a sense, in my own words, secularization has, as it were, stripped the church and society bare of the rust of a tradition, which Catholic Christian tradition, which had become sterile in many ways. And so secularization has now is forcing people to really face the basic questions, the meaning of life, the whole question of guilt. It's a huge question in people's lives, We're all aware of guilt, How do you cope with that, The whole question of hope. Where are we going to get hope from, And the question of God, So really, what the so-called movement of secularization is doing is actually, as it were, opening up the heart, the soul of Europe to God.
You are listening to a conversation with Father Vincent Toomey, Divine Word Missionary and Professor Emeritus of Moral Theology at Maynooth Seminary in Ireland. And in the second part of that conversation, Father Toomey will be taking a look at Ireland and how it can be a laboratory for the new evangelization. He will also discuss how the Irish Church needs to rebuild following a decade of scandals and the lead-up to the International Eucharistic Congress to be held in the Archdiocese of Dublin in June 2012. I'm Emer McCarthy.